Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Sports Takeover. You are listening to RMU Radio. Matt and Chris with you as always. Let's get started. We're going to start with football this week, college football to be specific, here off the bat. We're going to look at things a little bit more specific this week. We've talked a lot about the top 25, and we'll talk about the top 25 again, but we're going to look at who, at this point in the season, just beyond halfway, we actually think the contenders are. So, Chris, why don't you go ahead and get us started?
I got a list of six teams here who are the contenders, and unsurprisingly to most, it is the top six right now as it currently stands. Who are the top six undefeated teams? There's some other ones that are sprinkled out throughout the top 25 who are also undefeated, but they don't quite crack the list. So coming at number one, I have Ohio State. They have just dominated every single team they have played. They have not looked bad yet. They haven't really had a true tough test yet, though. They haven't played, I don't believe, anybody above the top 15 yet, but in their games they've played, they have been super strong offensively and defensively. They've played Michigan State, was the only top 25 team they played. They gave up 10 points to them. They've only given up more than 10 points once. They are just ridiculous. They're doing really good things, all without Urban Meyer. I think they have the easiest path to become one of the college football teams in the playoff. They have an easy success rate, too, as contenders. They have three ranked matchups still, but I think at the end of the season, Michigan's not going to really make that much difference. Wisconsin this week will be a big one. Penn State will be the most important one. But besides those games, they have Maryland, Rutgers in between, and they've already played a plethora of less than stellar teams. So Ohio State really looks to me like they have the easiest path.
Interesting that you have them at number one. I didn't really rank the teams I thought were contenders, but certainly Ohio State's in the conversation. I have several more than the top six, I think, in the conversation. I think everybody, in my opinion, everybody in the top 10 is in the conversation. I think everybody in the top 10 has a chance to get there. Notre Dame probably has a little a tougher path to get there, simply because Michigan this week is the only team on their schedule left that's really a test. To me, that's a must win for them. If they don't beat Michigan this week, they would drop to 5-2, and I don't see any way for them to get in. But when you look at this top 10, there are five SEC schools, all of which have to play some combination of each other still this season. So to me, I think anybody from Alabama at 1 could fall out, and anybody from Georgia at 10 could get in, just because they have to play each other. And beating a top 10 opponent, certainly a team, if you're Georgia, that you have to catch, is going to be very impactful to help them get in. So I think anybody in that top 10 can get in. There are four other undefeated teams that are in the top 25, but not in the top 10. Number 14, Baylor is 7-0. Number 16, SMU is 7-0. 17, Minnesota is 7-0. And 21, Appalachian State is 6-0. I don't think Appalachian State has any shot.
They do not. They're done.
Very similar to a UCF type of team. You can win all the games you want, but you have to beat somebody significant to get yourself to the playoff, and I don't think Appalachian State has that on their schedule. SMU, I don't think, really has a path either. I think there's too many good teams that have played better schedules ahead of them, around them. I don't think they can get in either. Baylor, however, so they still have Texas. They still have Oklahoma. I don't necessarily expect them to win those games.
They won't.
But if they do, certainly I think at that point they have to be in the conversation. I mean, at number 14, they're not that far out now. As teams in the top 10 shuffle, as they potentially beat some of those teams, I think they could make that move. Minnesota would be the other one. I don't think they're going to beat teams in the Big Ten, but they do still have Penn State, they do still have Iowa, they do still have Wisconsin, all of which are ranked. If they beat all of those teams, maybe if they beat two of those three, win the Big Ten West and upset the winner of the Big Ten East, maybe they have a path.
Well, so you came to me, we're like, let's get contenders and stuff. These teams have paths, but I just don't realistically see it happening. I will say, though, an undefeated Big 12 school, an undefeated Big 10 school, if those exist at the end of the season, without a doubt they will get in. If that is Minnesota and Baylor, if it's Ohio State, Oklahoma, Penn State, any of those five, two of those five teams, if they're undefeated, they will make it. It's not going to happen. Ohio State and Penn State play each other, so that's obviously
right
out of the equation for both of them to be undefeated. Minnesota would probably be playing, if they're undefeated at that point, they would play in the Big Ten title game either Ohio State or Penn State, which they're not going to. A one-loss Minnesota school will not make it. A one-loss Ohio State school, I think, still could. Just depends upon who they lose to. I think if a school in the Big 12 has one loss, they're pretty much out, though, there's so many SEC schools at the top, like you mentioned, that, and even Notre Dame too. Notre Dame always throws in that random clause there. Well, we're really good, and we lost to a really good Georgia team. And we have one loss. Well, what'd you do in your conference? That's where we got you. We don't have a conference to underperform in. Like Georgia, they lost to South Carolina, which you said top 10 included. I don't have Georgia in that conversation because I think there will be enough one-loss schools that they will have their loss outweigh any success they might have. When you look at Auburn or Florida, even LSU or Alabama, there's a good chance that all of these schools end up with one loss or some combination of one or two losses coming to the end of the season, that the SEC has no undefeateds. Also, I think a one-loss Clemson would not make it as well. An undefeated Clemson, without a doubt, but a one-loss Clemson, in comparison to these others, I think has the worst case. Most people thought Oklahoma had a very easy path, seeing how Texas was the only ranked team, but with this sudden emergence of Baylor, which, if Baylor stays good up until the week they play Oklahoma, it could potentially be a top 10 game, which would be phenomenal for most likely Oklahoma winning that game, but either team winning that game, it would be a great resume builder. So even if one of those schools has one loss, it would overbear a Clemson one loss. I don't think Clemson's going to lose this, so I don't think they really have that much to worry about. But if they do lose, they're going to have to start sweating a bit.
Yeah, as far as Clemson is concerned, I still think the ACC is theirs to lose. I don't think there's anybody that really poses a threat to them, and I think that winning the conference will not be an issue for them. You're right, a one-loss Clemson team certainly doesn't look as strong. But let's go back to Georgia for a second, because you said you don't think, regardless of what happens, you don't think a one-loss Georgia team gets in.
Not because, no, they lost to South Carolina at home in overtime. You can't lose that kind of game. The way that the college football is working out this year, other years, we've had multiple times where there's been one-loss teams making their way in. But with there being, 7-0 teams at the top right now, it's really hard. I mean, eventually these teams are going to have to fall, you'd imagine. But we're starting to run out of weeks where these teams are having time to lose. We're over halfway through the season now. There's less and less opportunity every week you see. And especially if Penn State and Ohio State, each of them, they play each other. Let's say one of those goes undefeated, wins the Big Ten. The other one has one loss. Well, I would put more credence on them than I would put on Georgia if their one loss was to each other versus Georgia's to South Carolina. The old adage used to be, if you lose early, you'll be lucky later. But now it's more who you lose to. And while Georgia may win some big games, they have Florida and Auburn still. They could potentially win those two. But if you see LSU and Alabama both have one loss, well, they're obviously going to be in a better position than Georgia, assuming they don't get upset. Obviously, upsets are the big contingency factor, but with the way all these teams are playing and all the ranked opponents they still have, I would wager that most of the upsets have been washed out already. But you never know, though.
See, so I think we look at this a little bit differently, because I look at Florida and Auburn remaining on Georgia's schedule as an opportunity for them to prove that they do belong in the playoff. And I'm looking at both of those teams. Florida's at number 7, Auburn's at number 9 right now. Assuming that this picture stays somewhat similar to what it is right now, a Georgia win against both of those teams certainly catapults them, obviously, above the two of them and somewhere into that top 6, at which point you're probably in that conference, especially once Ohio State and Penn State play. One of them probably falls out of that top 6, and I think there's room for Georgia to creep in. Maybe if Alabama and LSU, something happens with them, or obviously once one of them knocks off the other, maybe there's wiggle room in there for Georgia. And the SEC title game certainly is a chance for Georgia to prove themselves as well.
Yeah, you make a good point there.
I mean, let's say Alabama or LSU finish the regular season undefeated. Georgia finishes with one loss, certainly, again, top 6, top 5 probably at that point. If they then go on and win the SEC title game against an undefeated at the time Alabama or an undefeated at the time LSU, now you're looking at everybody in the SEC's got one loss. Yeah, Georgia lost to South Carolina, but they beat everybody else. And I certainly think that that's enough to get Georgia in.
So an undefeated SEC or Big Ten school will easily make the college football playoff, right?
Given the strength of these conferences, yes.
Right, so Alabama and LSU, only one of those teams can be undefeated.
Correct.
And Penn State or Ohio State, only one of those teams can be undefeated. So
correct.
There's essentially two spots for those four teams. Georgia does have an opportunity to win the SEC. If Georgia would, say, win the SEC with one loss, and LSU or Alabama is that other team that is undefeated, and then all three of those teams have one loss where Georgia won won the SEC, how do those three teams figure in, though? Because we're already probably putting Clemson in there, right? We got
assuming Clemson doesn't blow something.
Are we both assuming that Clemson's undefeated the rest of the year?
They certainly should be.
They should.
They should be.
A loss, they're done, but we both figure they're in. Big Ten school's probably in. You got those three teams with one loss in there. You also got Notre Dame still lurking around there, and that potential Big Ten school lurking around there. I don't see where we're putting these teams.
It's a really interesting situation. And again, just to look at the big picture again, the only way I think a Baylor or a Minnesota is in the conversation at the end of the year is if they're undefeated.
Right.
Which they have a path to be undefeated with some significance or some substance behind it.
If they go but that's undefeated, tough. They will make it because they will have beaten good teams over the course.
Right.
It's not going
to
happen.
Right. But to narrow it down again, I really think this top 10, anything can happen with this top 10 because so many of them have to still play each other. It's tough. I predicted last week that we would see a lot of undefeated teams looking at one SEC school, looking at Clemson, looking at one Big Ten school. So then it's, does Oklahoma go undefeated? Right? Maybe Oklahoma's in there.
They certainly have an easy
chance. If they're undefeated, Oklahoma should be in there.
Yeah, there's no reason
why they shouldn't. No reason not to be. But there's the very real possibility. I think in the Big Ten you'll see somebody, probably Ohio State, undefeated. Penn State travels to Ohio State, I would certainly favor the Buckeyes, and I would certainly favor them over anybody who comes out of the West, especially after we saw Wisconsin be upset this past weekend by Illinois. That's certainly, Wisconsin was the team that I thought could do it to Ohio State. I think that less now. Regardless, I think you could see a Big Ten school be undefeated. I think it's very possible that you don't in the SEC.
It is. The SEC could all beat up
on
each other.
It's so strong.
This is probably the strongest the SEC is. I mean, the SEC is always really great.
But in recent years, I think it's just been kind of the stigma of, oh, it's the SEC, as opposed to look at the records, look at the field, it's actually the SEC. This year, I think we're seeing that shift back to the stereotypical SEC football.
Yeah, like usually it's LSU, Georgia, and Alabama. In some combination, those three schools are competing for the top. More recently, Georgia's been there. But Auburn and Florida have just as easy opportunity. And you brought up Wisconsin. That was actually where I was going to go next with this. Wisconsin, to me, is Georgia. They lost to a bad team, a close game. They should not have lost it. However, they play Ohio State, they play Iowa, they play Minnesota. They might not necessarily win all those games. They can win all those games. They could get into a Big Ten title game where they would play either Ohio State or Penn State in that scenario then. If Wisconsin manages to win the Big Ten after winning all these games, do they have where if them and Georgia both have one loss and they both defeat an undefeated representative from the other side in their respective conference games? So Wisconsin, Georgia win their conference. Let's say for the sake of this happening, it would have to be an undefeated Penn State. It would have to be an undefeated Alabama or LSU. I don't think Alabama or LSU are really that indifferentiable that one school matters more to a schedule than the other one does. So out of those four teams, where do we put them into the whole picture of things here?
Okay, let me make sure I'm following you here.
So Wisconsin and Georgia have one loss.
Conference champions.
Yes, they both win their conference. They both defeated an previously undefeated team.
Yes.
Who, for the sake of argument, were 1-2 in the college football playoff going into the conference week. How does that?
To me, if you have all of those teams at one loss and you have a clear cut, this team just beat that team for the conference championship, it has to be the conference champions that get in. And I mean, I understand that if you look at the loss, one loss is certainly better than the other. One you lost to the conference champion, the other you lost to an unranked underdog. But I think if you're looking at, if I have two teams with the same record and one of them beat the other one head-to-head to claim the conference championship, I feel like they have to get in. And if they don't, unless there's something outstanding, you know, one way or the other that is very convincing in favor of the team that lost, I feel like your conference championship doesn't mean anything if that's not the team that gets in. If you have the same record and you beat the other team in the title game, I feel like it has to be them.
But then we saw 2 years ago, 2 years ago, and 3 years ago at this point, it was the conference title game didn't mean anything. Ohio State finished the year with their one loss, and they were the team that made it in. It was over a two-loss school, which was the difference maker, though, I think, in the end. But they didn't win their conference, didn't play in their championship game, almost helped them in a sense.
That's different, too, though, because it's not against, like, it's not, in your example, the team that's in question against the conference champion is the one that was just beaten by the conference champion.
Right.
Which Ohio State did not lose in the title game and then go in over the school that
right.
won it. So I think that's where the difference, and again, Penn State did have two losses that year. So I think there is a difference in those situations.
But so is the college football playoff looking more at who you beat or who you lose to then in that situation? Because essentially, the situation I'm providing, Wisconsin and Georgia, parallel schedules and parallel seasons. They have some good ranked teams in there. I mean, Wisconsin will have beaten, for them to go one loss throughout the rest of the way, they'll have five top 25 victories. Georgia, I think, would only have four top 25 victories. Not that that's that much different, though. So, but they're both underdog losses they face to teams that are in no way, shape, or form going to be competing for anything here versus a school that is undefeated all season. You lose, for the sake of argument, a close game, one-score game in your conference title game. Suddenly that loss, well, we only lost to a really good school, but they lost to a bad school, and suddenly we're worse than them. I mean, it's discussions like this are why we need to expand.
Yeah, it's interesting because I think looking at this top 10 right now, there's not enough room for the number of teams that should be in there. And, of course, you get into the conversation of, let's say Clemson's undefeated. Let's say Ohio State. Well, no, not with this example. We'll say Clemson, let's say Oklahoma are undefeated.
Yeah, them two are the undefeated. There's only two more spots to be
right. Had. And at that point, you're looking at four teams that are very deserving, and how do you choose? And if somebody else, maybe a Notre Dame will say, sneaks in there.
They could have one now loss
maybe,
in that situation.
Now maybe you're looking at two conference champions and only one spot for them, in addition to the two that they beat that also could be very deserving. So there's going to be a lot of moving pieces, and I don't know that we're going to have, well, we're definitely not going to have 10 teams that could get into the top four by the time it's all said and done because they play each other. But depending on who beats who, it could become real. It's already interesting, but it could become really interesting really fast.
And we could have a situation where Baylor and Oklahoma split. They could, one could beat the regular season, one could be the conference champion. Well, what the heck's the difference? They're two games, same team, but
it's interesting.
These things happen.
It's fun. This is the fun part of college football.
It is. We're at the point where there's enough to talk about that there's still everything is wide open. But essentially, we've narrowed it down to 10-ish teams, I guess. So
We're
getting somewhere.
Yeah, we'll say 10. We'll say 10.
After this week, most likely less. But as it currently stands, 10. Moving into the NFL now. NFL does not quite have the same amount of teams as college football does. But playoffs are still fun to talk about. And right now, the division picture is shaping up that there's a few teams that look like they're pretty much locks for the playoffs, and we're not even halfway through the season yet. One of those teams was pretty much a lock for the 2019 playoffs 3 years ago. I think that's the New England Patriots, currently sitting at 7-0. They just can take any record, you say it, and they will demolish it. Their defense is...
Oh, my gosh.
Their defense is ridiculous. They've given up 48 points through seven games. That's less than a touchdown a game. Barely. Their defense has forced 18 interceptions. They've only given up one touchdown. I mean, offense is all right, but doesn't really make it that much of a difference when the defense is so spectacular. They're 7-0. There's probably no chance they miss the playoffs, right?
I don't think so. I mean, Buffalo's right behind them at 5-1.
But even Buffalo, so.
Buffalo's the second best team in the AFC right now.
They are. That's
they are 5-1.
What a sentence.
Isn't it? I mean, we've got other teams with five wins, but Buffalo is the only one of those that has one loss. So,
and it was to those Patriots, too.
Yes, close game, but yes, it was to those Patriots. I don't see any way that the Patriots don't get in. I predicted, was it last week, that they would get in very comfortably. I think I said by three games over everybody else in the AFC.
Yes.
So I certainly think the Patriots are fine. They do lose Josh Gordon for the season. They bring in Mohamed Sanu, who...
I would consider that being an upgrade,
I would
personally.
Say so, too. If not, it's pretty close. I mean, it's certainly not anything to be disappointed with.
They've been looking for receiver help for a while now. They tried Demaryius Thomas, didn't work. They tried AB. We don't need to say anything more about him. Sanu is a stable receiver that will certainly help an offense that doesn't need the help, but would, of course, welcome it because they realize that, hey, we got to actually win some offensive games. They haven't played too tough of a schedule yet. But
and this is what's so frustrating and so difficult with the New England Patriots is that they have put themselves in a position that the core of that team is good every year, that while other teams are trying to catch up and get to good, the Patriots are making small, subtle moves that get to great. I think they gave up a second-round pick in this deal.
Yes, second round.
What does that mean to New England? Absolutely nothing. They don't care. They have a roster that's built to last. Obviously, it's lasted for a long time. It will continue to last. It's going to take major changes by them or by some other team to end this dynasty, because right now they are just one step ahead. They've put themselves in a position where they're ahead, and they've been smart enough to stay one step ahead for years, and that's exactly what this Sanu trade is. He's a useful receiver that any team chasing the Patriots in the AFC could have probably benefited from, most anyway.
Yeah, I agree with that.
And they pick him up instead. Was it because they need to? No, it's because they have distanced themselves, and they are continuing to make that gap larger.
Yeah, a while ago, almost 20 years at this point, my goodness, it was a young, good Tom Brady. The middle years, they were very good Patriots team, 16-0, but they got upset by a Giants team. 4 years later, they get upset by another Giants team. Those easily could have been Super Bowl victories. Now, we look at it recently, Brady is not an excellent quarterback anymore, but the system that New England has in place allows for him to not have to be excellent anymore. This defense might be the best defense I've ever seen in my life. It's always been about Tom Brady and Bill Belichick, but this defense is, I'd say it's better than the Steelers defense from 10 years ago when they beat the Cardinals. I did not really witness that much of the Ravens defense about 16 years ago whenever they beat the Giants. Yeah, that was a very strong defense. But this Patriots defense is insane. It's, if their offense never touched the field this year, the Patriots would be 3-3-1. That's insane just how much their defense has done for them. They have put themselves, they just know how to play the system so well, and credit to them. And here's the rest of the AFC teams that are trying to catch up to them. In the North, we have the Ravens at 5-2, who I guess we kind of got to start to believe them a little bit more now. They beat a very good Seahawks team last week, who we probably praised too much, and they started listening to us. Because last week, the Seahawks were at one loss. Now both teams sit at 5-2, but they went to Seattle and kind of dominated Russell Wilson and the Seahawks in this game. Gave themselves a very comfortable cushion over a very not good AFC North. They have a two and a half game lead right now over the 2-4 Browns and Steelers, and they're putting themselves in positions to win. Lamar Jackson is doing very well for himself and the Ravens, and there's no reason why I don't think this will continue either.
I still have faith in the Browns and the Steelers to push the Ravens. I really do.
I would like to.
I've said it repeatedly that this is about where I had the Browns when I did my preseason picks at, you know, struggling early in the season because their schedule was not easy. It does get easier in the second half.
Not against New England, though.
This week, I believe.
Yeah, so.
No, it does not get any easier this week, but eventually it will. And I think at that point, the Browns will start to come back a little bit. For me, it's just a matter of whether or not the Ravens are actually for real. And teams continue to allow Lamar Jackson to use his legs, and people can knock him all they want to, but if that's what works, continue to do it. And he certainly is, and someone has to find a way to slow that down. And once they do, I think Baltimore's in trouble because the defense isn't the same, like we've talked about.
No, it has holes in it.
They have weapons, but if they can find a way, if defenses can find a way to shut down Lamar Jackson, you shut down the Ravens. And then it becomes interesting as I think Pittsburgh and Cleveland begin to push up towards the top of that division.
But to be fair to the Ravens defense, they saw the need at cornerback. They went out and acquired Marcus Peters, and in his first game, he intercepted Russell Wilson for the first time this season. Russell Wilson has thrown an interception, and Peters took it to the house. So the Ravens saw a need, addressed it, and a very small sample size is worked out tremendously for them, though. So they have themselves, it's almost theirs to lose at this point. Like you said, their schedule gets a little bit harder. The Browns and Steelers may be a little bit easier, but they have a comfortable enough lead now that they can afford to go, five and four throughout the rest of the way, which would be a very average. But at 10-6, I can see them easily winning this division as it currently stands, though. AFC South, it was 2-2 across all four teams after week four, and it's a little bit more separated right now. But boy, not enough, I don't think.
It's separated by AFC South standards. That's about all we've got.
Yeah, they're always close.
The Colts at 4-2, the Texans at 4-3, the Jags at 3-4, and the Titans at 3-4. It's very interesting. It's very close.
They're all different teams every week.
Yeah, it really is. And
there's no consistency.
We kind of talked about that last week when we picked the Colts-Texans game. I believe we both picked the Colts and got that right.
Yes.
Kind of just because my reasoning was more because, well, I saw a good game from the Texans last week, so it, probably not this week.
Exact same, yeah.
So it's very interesting the way that it works out. The Colts are at the top, but the best offense belongs to Houston by 41 points in this division. Kind of
their offense is for real.
It is. And the best defense is Tennessee, all the way at the bottom, but they've allowed 26 fewer points than anybody else in the division. So I guess the Colts are solid all the way around, which I think we kind of expected.
Brissett has played very well.
Jacksonville is just kind of there, I guess, sitting at 3-4, not doing anything super well, not doing anything super poorly. It is what it is. Houston would be the second wild card right now, half a game up on the Oakland Raiders, who are 5-100. Thank you for that. So yeah, the South is still very much wide open. I mean, the gap between the whole division is tighter than the AFC North between first and second, and as tight as the AFC East between first and second. So kind of interesting to look at it that way.
Yeah, the Colts beat the Texans this week, claiming that top spot. Could have been the Texans, but like you said, they looked good 2 weeks ago, so probably not this week. This week, I'm sure they'll look good again. I mean, how do they go from beating the they beat the Chiefs, right? Yeah, both those.
Yes.
Yeah, both those teams beat the Chiefs, and you look at them now. You're like, boy, I don't know who to take in this. And then if you think about it, there's a very realistic possibility that the winner of this division plays the Chiefs come the playoffs. And you look at it and say, how the heck is this 11-5, 10-6 Colts/Texans team supposed to play this 12-4 Chiefs team? Well, clearly they both play them very well in their first opportunity. It's just, it's so hard to discern between them. I think you like the Titans a little bit more than most. Jags are, they're floating around there. They're whatever.
Titans are about where I thought they'd be.
Yeah,
they're pretty average.
They're average. They've looked bad, but they're average enough. And then we move to the West, where I'm just disappointed in the Chargers, and everything else is pretty much expected. I would expect the Chargers and the Raiders to have flip-flop records. Chargers 2-5 is disappointment, but Chiefs 5-2. They're doing good, but they're going to be a little bit strapped these upcoming weeks, though.
Yeah, no Patrick Mahomes, dislocated knee, but not good timing. Not that it's ever good timing to lose the reigning MVP.
Well, no.
But Green Bay's coming to town, and that's no easy win. Especially when Kansas City's only 1-2 at home this season, which is a place where people typically don't want to play, but they found a way so far. The Chargers, though, my goodness. I didn't think they were going to be division contenders because of the injuries and whatnot. But 2-5 is certainly not what I had in mind. They are not playing well. Melvin Gordon has not looked good since coming back from his holdout.
He doesn't look like anything.
He has admitted that the holdout was a mistake.
Duh.
Yeah, thanks. Denver's a little bit disappointing at 2-5. I mean, I didn't have huge expectations,
no.
But a little bit better would have been nice. The Raiders at 3-3 are half a game out of a playoff spot, which I, regardless of the record and the time of season, I don't think is anything anybody thought they'd hear this season, so good for the Raiders.
However, after they play the remaining 10 games, I don't think they will be even remotely close to discussion for this.
Right.
It's funny, the Raiders are in second place, a negative 38-point differential.
I was just going to make that point.
Chargers last place, negative 1-point differential.
Yeah.
Chargers are doing it to themselves.
Chargers have played a lot of close games. Ones that haven't gone their way.
But imagine a look on everybody's face when they go 11-5 and win the Super Bowl.
All right, calm down.
Yeah, that's not going to happen.
Down.
AFC West, I see the same as the AFC East. It's the Chiefs to lose.
Yeah, and I'm not as sold on the Chiefs as some are. I wasn't before the season. I'm still not now.
No, I wasn't either, but...
But I think by default...
Yes, given their division.
This is where they... Yeah, they belong at the top.
AFC, not too exciting. NFC, there's a whole lot of everything going on everywhere. We'll start in the East. The Cowboys have a nice 4-3 division lead, right where you expect them. It's pretty much the AFC South of the National Football Conference. Eagles, they're a different team every week, so this week, naturally, they got blown out by these Dallas Cowboys. They are both underwhelming this year. I'm sure they will continue to underwhelm us in many ways. Dallas does have a plus 66-point differential, which is better than the Eagles' negative 15, but these teams, I think, are just having some issues that are probably going to persist throughout the whole season.
It is. It's the same story as the AFC South. Dallas, like you said, really good. They're tied for second in the NFC in points scored. They're fifth in the NFC in points against. Those are good numbers. Plus 66 is a good number, yet they're at 4-3. They win big or they lose randomly. It's very
strange.
They lost
to the Jets.
Yeah, it's a very strange dynamic that they have going on.
Blew out the Eagles.
The Eagles already have more losses than I thought they were going to have.
Not 13-3.
Their defense is so bad. They've given up 186 points. There are only two teams in the NFC that have given up more than that. their defense is not good at all. And when you've got a Dallas team that can put up 37 on you, that makes it difficult to win those games. The Giants
suck.
Looked like they had some life. Good old Daniel Jones. I'm still not buying that he should be in over Eli, but that's not the point right now. The point is that after having some hope, they've lost some games, and now they're right where they belong at 2-5. Yep. And the Redskins could not be much worse, sitting at 1-6 only because of a failed two-point conversion a couple weeks ago by the Dolphins. That's the only thing that's kept them from being without a win, and they'll be lucky to get another win.
Yeah, those two teams are out.
They look atrocious.
Yeah, they're both bad. There's no hope, chance, or prayer for any of them. Honestly, I don't think there's a hope or prayer for the second-place team in this division either.
No.
Given how mediocre it's been, I don't see it changing drastically enough.
And I just don't trust the Giants that much.
No. Oh, I know. I meant between the Cowboys and Eagles.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I think there's only one team to come out of this division.
Oh, yeah, given definitely, how they started. Definitely.
Especially when we look at the rest of the NFC and how exciting it is. In the North, we have the Packers at 6-1, which... I know they're not the best team in football, but man, they look like they are a very...
They're up there.
They're a Super Bowl contender. Absolutely. Aaron Rodgers is playing some of the best football of his life. Minnesota struggled to begin the season. Kirk Cousins, we do not like that. They were 2-2. However, he has turned to the naysayers and critics, myself included, and said, oh, I'm just going to ball out these next 3 weeks. And the Vikings find themselves at 5-2, right there in the thick of things. Only thanks to Green Bay beating them a few weeks ago, they are not in first place. So they are playing great football right now. Adam Thielen's injured. Don't know how long. But if they can continue to play as well as many thought they should, it will be good things to come for them. Bears, they've underperformed, but Mitch Trubisky, I think, has been widely considered, by me at least, to not be a great quarterback for them. You don't draft quarterbacks from Duke or North Carolina. You draft basketball players from those schools. The Giants drafted Daniel Jones from Duke. He's okay. He drops the ball a lot. The Bears drafted Mitch Trubisky from UNC. They're 3-3. I'm sure they were kicking themselves for not having a Deshaun Watson or Patrick Mahomes right now who are leading their teams to division leads. Meanwhile, Trubisky is leading them to a third place, very mediocre stance in their division. Detroit, they're just struggling, and they're having a tough time overcoming the challenges in front of them, that's for sure.
So, yeah, I think Detroit is a team that, somewhat similar to, say, the Chargers or the Steelers, are in a lot of close games, and they just aren't making the big plays at the right times to close out games.
Yep.
Now, they probably should be 3-2-1.
Yes.
Because of the Monday night game against Green Bay.
They should be 4-1.
Sure, they could have made more plays there, but I would say that they took a loss there through relatively no fault of their own.
No, not entirely.
This is a team that realistically could probably be...
It could be 4-2.
They could probably be 5-1 had they, not given up a fourth quarter comeback to Kyler Murray, had they not turned the ball over two or three times in the red zone. I mean, against the Chiefs, I believe. I mean, this is a team that realistically could be a 5-win team.
They play close, but they don't get the result.
Right.
That's what matters at the end of the day.
Right. So, I mean, I think that there's something to be optimistic about there. I still like them more than I like the Bears. I think the biggest difference, in my opinion, in this division is the Packers. I mean, I thought they'd be a good team, but they look like a great team.
They look excellent.
Aaron Rodgers looks fantastic. He looks like an MVP-type quarterback.
He's done it before.
Minnesota's where I thought they would be. Chicago's where I thought they would be. I would like to see Detroit make that jump, make those plays at key times, and get the win by 4 instead of the loss by 3, but that's something that they need to work on, especially in this tight division.
Yeah, this is a fun division to watch. Chicago, yeah. I don't think has a chance to win, but they have a chance to play spoiler to the Vikings or Packers' ambitions. I'll be looking forward to that. The NFC South has mostly being considered the Saints to win all year. I thought the Falcons had a chance, but sitting at 1-6, I will no longer say anything else about the Falcons on this show. They are dead to me. However, my old go-to in the NFC South, thanks to Kyle Allen, are doing great. Carolina Panthers sitting at 4-2. They're looking phenomenal. Start to season 0-2. We're really struggling. Cam Newton had foot injury, did not look good. Kyle Allen comes in, gives this team life, gives them a good opportunity to not win the division, but maybe get a wild card, because those New Orleans Saints look just as good, I think, as the Packers, if not even better. And what are they doing this without, Matt? Who has not been there?
Hey, this whole division's being led right now at the top by backup quarterbacks. Teddy Teddy Bridgewater's getting the job done for the Saints.
5-0.
Kyle Allen for the Panthers.
4-0.
Crazy to see what's going on at the top of this good division. Things. Certainly, in my opinion, it's the Saints the whole way. I'm not totally sold on the Panthers just yet. I think it's like the Panthers to go on a winning streak and then follow it up with a losing streak.
They have a soft spot in my heart.
I just don't think the Saints let this go. When Breeze comes back, I don't see them being any worse than they are right now with Teddy Bridgewater. I think this was already one of the best teams. It was my Super Bowl pick. I like the Saints a lot.
Yeah, they were a bad call away from the Super Bowl last year. The hope, I think, for most was, okay, if Bridgewater gets us to go 3-2, we'll be in a good position for when Breeze comes back. When you go 5-0 with a backup, you are in great position to do whatever the heck you want to the rest of the league. However, though, they do have Tampa Bay's in that division, but they're 2-4 right where they should be.
Tampa Bay's leading the division in points scored with 173. Too bad Winston throws it to the other team as much as his own team.
Yeah.
They have the yards. They have some points, but
they got some problems to iron out. Maybe in 2 years, this year. Sorry, Tampa, you're done.
Just to reinforce your feelings about the Falcons, 223 points is how many they've given up. No team in the NFL has given up more.
You let me down, Dirty Birds. You let me down. Another bird-like team that's not letting many people down, though, Arizona Cardinals. They sit at last in the NFC West.
Bird-like?
You know, it's kind of a segue. They're
as if the Cardinals aren't birds. Sorry, go ahead.
They're very birded. Either way, 3-3-1 for Cardinal standards, phenomenal. However, their division's pretty good, so that puts them in last. But I don't think they had any aspirations of winning the division, and they shouldn't when there's... Honestly, in my opinion, there could be three Super Bowl contenders in this division right now. The Rams are 4-3. I like them just because they have a soft spot in my heart, too. I don't know. They haven't showed me enough, honestly. If I'm being quite frank about it, they need to do better. They made the move for Jalen Ramsey. They won this week over the Falcons. They looked better. I need to see this more. The Seahawks, I thought, were going to be probably around 4-3 at this point. I would say them and the Rams were probably flip-flopped where I'd expect them to be. Rams maybe 5-1 or 6-1. But I'm forgetting one team, Matt. Which team am I forgetting?
49ers are just rolling right now.
They might
now.
Be the best team in football. That's not the Patriots.
6-0. Defense is fantastic. Not scoring a lot of points, but you don't need to, and your defense is only giving up 64. That's 100 fewer than any other team in this division. A good division, and this defense is running laps around the other teams. Seattle would be a wild card team right now. Obviously, the Niners would be at the top of the conference. The Niners just acquired Emmanuel Sanders from the Denver Broncos.
Yes, they got him in a fifth-round pick in exchange for a third and a fourth. Pretty good trade for both sides, I think.
That'll help that offense complement the defense.
Absolutely will.
I mean, that's the team that I'm really sold on. Seattle, what I've seen on the field tells me that I should be sold on them. I tried that strategy last week, and they lost to the Ravens. The Rams, on paper, I feel like I should believe in, but on the field, they haven't shown me a lot.
Yeah, when they go on the field, they take that paper and just burn it in front of you.
This might be one of the most interesting ones, just because a lot of what's happening here doesn't match up with what I'm expecting, and I'm excited to see what gives. Whether it's what I thought or whether it's what's happening so far. It's still early enough that we still need to see some more. So this is an interesting division.
I want to say it's up in the air. I want to say that the Seahawks and Rams are good enough, but I don't know if the Niners are bad enough to let this go.
Yeah. I mean, it's still tight, though. It's still tight. It's only a game and a half for the Seahawks that they're back.
I know, and they're all going to play each other again. I mean, the Niners have only beaten the Rams. They have two games against the Seahawks, another one against the Rams still. Could be room for movement.
If you want to be excited about the NFL playoff race, even this early in the season, the NFC is where you're going to want to be at.
Yeah, don't worry about the AFC. Don't worry about the show right now either, because we are going to take a quick break. But coming up, we got some MLB and some soccer action, so please stay tuned.
We'll be right back.
Welcome back, Sports Takeover, Matt and Chris. There are playoffs to be discussed. First, in Major League Baseball, we are to the final, Chris. We're to the World Series. Game one is in the books. The Nationals keep on keeping on with this momentum. 5-4 over the favorites, the Houston Astros.
What are they doing?
Gerrit Cole, not his best outing last night. Gave up 5 earned runs. First loss in the last 25 starts for him. He was 19-0 in that stretch coming into last night. Soto for the Washington Nationals, 3-for-4 with a home run and 3 RBIs. Those were the big ones from last night. Game 2 is in progress. It currently stands 2-2 very early in this game. My first impression is a lot more offense than I expected coming into this series.
Yeah, there's a lot more offense. The playoffs have been kind of down in terms of offense. It's been a lot of dominant pitching performances, not a lot of 10-run games or so. 2 years ago, however, the Astros played the Dodgers. Some people thought the balls were juiced. I thought maybe. It's a possibility. Here we are, another Astros World Series where the ball is just flying off the bat like it's wiffle ball in the backyard. What's going on? Are the balls juiced again? I'm not saying they are, but I'm also not saying they aren't. It's very un-Cole-like to go, what, it was since May 22nd. Yesterday was October 22nd. 5 months he went without losing a game, and he lost it last night. Gave up 2 home runs, not great by his standards, and only had 6 strikeouts. Max Scherzer gave up 2 runs in 5 innings, had 7 strikeouts. So they're still getting the job done, but the ball was flying off a little bit more than I would like. Even today, Alex Bregman had a home run already. Anthony Rendon had a double. That short left field in Astros Stadium certainly has some sort of factor in this, but it just seems a little bit suspicious to me that runs are being scored in such high quantities whenever pitching was clearly the most important battle that this World Series is going to feature. The Astros had the best pitching staff in the AL. The Nationals had the best pitching staff in the NL. Going against each other, small run series, you're going to have to win games by scoring 3 runs, 4 runs maybe. Nationals get it done with 5 last night, and they already get out of the gate running with 2. It's interesting.
It is interesting. I won't comment on your theories.
No conspiracies
because,
from your side?
No conspiracies over here, but that doesn't mean you're wrong, doesn't mean you're right. But it's an interesting thing to consider. And you talk about the pitching matchup tonight, or last night was fantastic. Tonight is just as impressive. It's Steven Strasburg, 3-0 this postseason, 1.64 ERA, going up against Justin Verlander, 1-2, a 3.7 ERA. So two pitchers that are doing very good things. I believe, and I'm wondering if you feel the same way, that tonight is a must-win for the Houston Astros.
I don't know. That's interesting.
The reason that I say that is because of the format that we've talked about many times, and that's the fact that games 3, 4, and 5 will be played in Washington, D.C. Now, certainly, this Houston team has proved that they're good enough that they can come back from pretty much anything. And if they go down 2-0, am I going to stop believing in them? Not necessarily, but going to Washington for the next 3 games is tough if you're down 2-0, especially if the Nationals at that point have gotten to 2 of your 3 star pitchers.
Yeah, it's hard for me to say it's a must win. They can't get blown out. There has to be a game that they stay, if they do decide to lose, which I really hope they don't, it has to be a game they stay competitive throughout. They can't let Washington get the better of them because their pitching is strong enough, I think, to be able to lead them through 3 games at home. I'm confident they could win 2 out of 3 at home if they have a 2-0 lead. That's not, given the way they are playing, given the circumstances they have, I don't think it's impossible for them to win 2 out of 3 at home, but I wouldn't exactly call it a must win. Last series, we saw in the ALCS, the Astros lost game 1, 7-0 to the Yankees. They got blown out. Well, they won the series 4-2.
They came back and then took care of business.
They played very well, yes. They did not. And game 2 was a close game, too.
Sure.
It went extra innings. It required a walk-off home run. That was the difference maker in the Yankees having stolen 2 games from the Astros versus, okay, now it's a 5-game series. So I don't think it's a must-win, but it's a must-competitive for sure.
That's fair. One other thing that I would note looking at this series is the amount of rest that these two teams are coming into the series on. The Nationals ended the NLCS on October 15th. The Astros were off on the 16th because of a postponed game. But the ALCS carried on into the 19th of October. So certainly the Nationals are well rested. And if you look at last night, Scherzer went 5 innings, Cole went 7. Pitch counts were similar, but nevertheless, that's more work from Cole, less from Scherzer. Maybe that makes a difference going deeper into the series.
I do have one thing for you there. There's been 13 times a team has been down 0-2 and come back to win a 7-game series. Most recently was 2004 Boston Red Sox. I'm going to change my tone. Must win for Houston. If you go down 0-2, you're probably not going to come back, just given the way it's gone recently.
If there's a team that could do it, it's this Astros team.
I would like to say so, but
this Nationals team is tough.
They aren't the best team, I don't think. They clearly weren't. They were a wild card team.
Yeah.
However, they match up, I think, the best against the Astros out of everybody. They seem to have the same successes. They
similar
have
build,
a few good bats, some good young ones, some good veterans, strong starters, not great bullpens. It's pretty much carbon copies of them. Astros just do it a little bit better, but the Nationals are doing it just as good right now, though, and that's the difference maker for sure.
It's a very good point. It's going to be a very entertaining series. I think it'll be a fairly long series.
Yes,
Have said that at the beginning of the postseason, but the Nationals have certainly got my attention. So exciting to see where this World Series takes us. It should be a good one.
Absolutely. And the show will now take us to everybody's favorite part, soccer. Not the MLS playoffs, though. We're going to stick a little bit closer to home. It's the end of October. We have playoffs in the Berg. And it's the Riverhounds, the Pittsburgh Riverhounds. They are in the USL, the second tier of soccer in the United States. And they are the Eastern Conference regular season champions. We had a season preview way back in March, if you remember correctly. I had them at 5th in the conference. The Eastern Conference has 18 teams. I had them right in the middle of the playoff picture at 5th. Top 10 make it. They're sitting very pretty at number 1. They finished the year 68 points on 34 games. One better than Nashville, had 67 in second place. They were 19-4-11. That's 4 losses, 11 draws on the year. 4 losses is tied for the best in the entire USL. On the western side, Phoenix had 4 losses as well. They had 24 wins to couple that with, so they're kind of ridiculous. The only opportunity we have to play them would be the title game, though. So as far as the East is considered, the path to success goes through Pittsburgh.
I wasn't going to do it because I just didn't want to, but he's been bothering me and you for the last week or so. Our roommate Ryan Adams was on the show last year. He's a big soccer fan. He predicted that the Hounds would finish second to Nashville finishing first. Well, because he was the closest of the three of us in predicting where Pittsburgh would finish, and because the team that he said would beat Pittsburgh finished only 1 point behind them, credit to him, he was pretty much right on the money with that.
Nashville had more wins. They had 20 to the Hounds' 19.
And a 1 point difference, like you said, but credit to him. He did pick very well, and we'll be happy to have him on the show again because he did what we wanted him to do. So
sure, he did the right
shout
thing.
Out to him for knowing what he's talking about. But you're right. Going back to the outlook here, the Hounds will have home field for as long as they are in the Eastern Conference side of the playoffs. They're coming in on a hot streak. They're 4-0-1 in their last 5. New this year in the USL is a play-in game, so we don't yet know who the Hounds will face. I believe both play-in games are being played as we speak.
Yeah, they're going on right now. Neither are over yet. Both of them are tied. Look like they're going to be going to extra time, so we'll have to wait till next week to figure out who we played already this upcoming weekend, unfortunately.
So there's 3 options. Obviously, the Hounds will take the team with the lowest seed after the 2 playing games are over. But number 8, Ottawa, number 9, Charleston, and number 10, Birmingham are the potential opponents for the Hounds in the first round. Ottawa, the Hounds played all these teams twice. Ottawa, the results were 2-2 and 4-0 for the Hounds. Against Charleston, it was 2-2 and 1-0 for the Hounds. And against Birmingham, the Hounds won both 4-1 and 1-0. So I don't know if there's a team here that the Hounds would prefer to play. Certainly they've had some level of success against all of them. We know what the Riverhounds are capable of at Highmark Stadium at home. I think the Hounds certainly could be in line to win their first game at Highmark in the postseason. They certainly showed in the regular season that they're more than capable. I think my biggest concern with them would be the lack of wins, the number of ties that they had. They did not lose. They were not a team that lost a lot of games, but there were a lot of ties.
They didn't lose any at home. They had 10 wins, 7 ties, 0 losses at home. So they get it done at home.
They do. And, I mean, in general, they get it done. But I think, as obviously in the playoffs, ties aren't going to be happening, I need to at least see from them that they can go into extra time and come out with a victory. That would be my only thing that concerns me with this team, because otherwise this is a strong team.
Yeah, once you get the PKs, it's up in the air. Last year they had a home game against Bethlehem in the first round of the playoffs, went to PKs. They came up a little bit short in that regard. So if you can avoid doing that, it'd be helpful for you. Birmingham, I think, is the obvious choice for the team you want to play. They're the 10 seed.
Sure.
They have a negative goal differential.
Negative 16.
Yeah, they don't have a winning record, whereas the other two teams are at least about 500 or so. They're right underneath it. So they are the most ideal team to play. Charleston is very average. They have barely a winning record, a zero goal differential, so they're as indescribable as you make it. But Birmingham, we went 2-0 against, so that's fine. Charleston, 1-0-1, that's also fine. Ottawa, I mean, they're the best, obviously, of the three teams that we can play. However, we seem to handle them much better in the victory against them than we did against Charleston, right? You said it was 4-0?
4-0 against Ottawa, yes.
Yeah, in addition to the 2-2 draw, so I don't think there's a team here that we can lose to, of these three at least.
Sure.
Future weeks maybe, but this week I don't think so.
Just a couple of players to watch as the Hounds enter the postseason and hopefully hang into the postseason. Nico Brett led the team in goals again, 13 for him on the season. Canardo Forbes led the team with 9 assists. And Toby Adewale, most used player, led the team in minutes played with 2,847. Very solid defender for the Hounds. Very important on the back end of that team.
Out of the 34 games, that's almost 32 entire games he played.
Yeah, so very important player there. And of course, throughout the season and during our predictions last year, we talked about a couple of other guys. I mean, really, there's a lot of solid performances on this team. It's a very well-rounded soccer team.
As long as the Hounds are in the playoffs, we'll be talking about them on the show. Next week is a certainty they'll be on it. Hopefully they stay in the discussion for the weeks to come. For now, that's the bulk of the show, but we still got quick picks and bold predictions like we all crave for. Do you happen to have the quick pick or bold prediction numbers on you offhand?
Ooh, good question. Let me see what I can find here.
All right, well, we can get the quick pick numbers possibly after we get through them. So I'll start us off. We have NFL action, the mediocre Eagles against the overachieving Bills. Bills have a really good defense. The Eagles can't score. Buffalo is 5-1. I see 6-1 in their future. I see the Eagles' demise further in their future. I got Buffalo.
Quick picks last week. I was 5-2. You were 4-3. That has us in a tie on the season.
Awesome.
Eagles at Bills. I'm going to take the Eagles. Very difficult team to predict, as we have talked about. Their defense is bad. Buffalo's offense isn't that good. So I'm going to go with the Eagles. Panthers at 49ers. I'm going to go with the 49ers. I don't believe in the Panthers quite as much as you like to. The defense of the 49ers, I think, it's just really tough to beat. Sanders boosts that offense. I'll go with the Niners.
You know who I picked? The Panthers. I have to go with them.
All right.
I said as long as Kyle Allen is the reason that the Panthers succeed, they will have success. Once Cam Newton goes back, it's all bets are off. They can go wherever. But Kyle Allen will continue to lead this team to success as he has. They're coming off a bye. They're fresh. Niners had a tough, muddy game last week in a downpour that was pretty much hurricane-like conditions in Washington. I just think Panthers are better equipped for this one. Packers at Chiefs. The Chiefs got Matt Moore. They don't got a whole lot going for them. 2 losses out of their last 3. The Packers are rolling. Aaron Rodgers, he wants that MVP crown from Patrick Mahomes. Being the Chiefs at Arrowhead is certainly one way to help increase his odds. I have Green Bay.
I have the Packers as well. No Mahomes makes a huge difference. I don't like the Kansas City defense. I do like Aaron Rodgers, so I'll take the Packers. Into college football, number 13, Wisconsin at number 3, Ohio State. I have to go with Ohio State. They play very well at home. Wisconsin's coming off an upset to Illinois. Maybe they have something to prove. I think it points out their weaknesses more than anything. Ohio State, as you mentioned, doesn't have a lot of those. I'll go with the Buckeyes.
Going into last week, this was supposed to be a top 6 matchup. Wisconsin decided to lose a week early. I know we are putting all these possibilities into the scenarios for how Wisconsin can get to the title game and all that. It's not going to happen. Ohio State, they're so good. Wisconsin's defense is great. Ohio State is just that much better. At home, no chance the Buckeyes lose here. Number 2, LSU faces number 9, Auburn. Auburn seems to be playing every single top 10 team that exists this season. LSU, their offense is ridiculous. Joe Burrow does it all. He will do it again, once again, at home against the Tigers in this one.
I'm going to go with LSU. They've already got 2 top 10 wins on the season. They were a team that I liked a lot going into the year. I haven't seen anything to prove otherwise. I'm going with LSU. Number 8, Notre Dame. At number 19, Michigan. I'm going to go with Notre Dame. If they want to get in the playoff, this is a must win. Michigan's a team that's kind of been all over the place here so far. I'm going to go with Notre Dame coming off some rest.
I told you last week Michigan would be able to fall out of the top 25 after they lost 2 weeks in a row. Last week they did their part by dropping one to Penn State. This week they're going to drop one to Notre Dame. Notre Dame has to make a case for the college football playoff, beating a disheveled, yet still good enough, Michigan team is one way to do it. I have the Fighting Irish. And we have a Stanley Cup final rematch for you. No, it's not a weird one from a while ago. It's from this most recent year. It's Blues at Bruins as we move to the NHL. I'm going to take Boston this one. It's at home. They have, it's kind of a revenge game. They lost in 7 last year to the Blues. They just don't want to lose another one in the regular season to him. I'm going to go with Boston.
Yeah, I have the Bruins as well. Similar reason. They have that little extra incentive, I think, in this type of a game. They are off to a better start than the Blues. I think probably they're a stronger team, if not very even. So I'm going to go with the Bruins as well.
All right, and last but not least, we have bold predictions. I'm going to start off in the NFL. We talked about the 8 division leaders. I think come the end of the season, of those 8 we talked about, only half of them are still going to be leading their divisions. A lot of them, we said there were certainties for, yeah, they're pretty much locks, the Patriots, but there still could be a lot of movement around. So at least 4 of the 8 that we see will be different come the end of the year.
I, too, have one regarding division winners. Oh, do you? A little bit different. Yeah, I'm going to say that at least 3 divisions will be clinched entering week 15. That's with 3 weeks still to play.
Oh, boy.
I think that there's a lot of disparity this year in the NFL. There are a lot of teams at the very top. There are a lot of teams at the very bottom. And in some divisions, they happen to have some of both. And I think we're going to see some early clinching, at least, of the divisions.
So what, you got Chiefs and Patriots and Saints then in that
3? None specifically, but those would certainly be ones that seem like good candidates.
Interesting. I'm going to move into MLB for mine. 2 for the World Series. First off, runs scored. I talked about the ball is juiced a little bit. I think 47 runs is going to be where we're going to see the World Series end up. The way I calculated that was we scored 9 in game 1. The Astros are going to win their next 4 games. We're going to average about 9 in game with a little bit more than that. So 47, right where we're going to stand.
Interesting. I like that. That's very different. I have one more in the NFL before I move to baseball. I think that the 3 bottom teams in the NFL come the end of the season are going to have a combined 3 wins. There are some teams this year that are really bad.
Bengals,
really,
Dolphins,
really bad.
Redskins.
Redskins are probably the other one. Really bad. They do play each other somewhere, which is kind of why they have to have some wins, but boy, oh boy, I don't think it's going to be a lot. I'm going to say 3.
Heck, even the Jets could throw themselves into that mix with the way they looked this past week. My last one will also be in the World Series. Last year, I said Craig Kimbrel will be World Series MVP. It was Steve Pierce. He was a little bit of an underdog. So I'll go with the underdog this year. Josh Reddick, right fielder for the Houston Astros. Usually hits 9th, doesn't contribute too much. However, I think he'll contribute just enough to help win the World Series MVP and get that shiny pickup truck that they give out.
My pick for World Series MVP, I'm going to go with Carlos Correa. Has not been overly effective this postseason. He's had his moments, but relatively quiet. A 174 batting average, 2 home runs, 6 RBIs. I think if the Astros are going to win this World Series, everybody has to contribute, and I think Carlos Correa could make his contribution at the perfect time.
Boy, aren't we going to look stupid when Juan Soto is hoisting both the World Series MVP and the trophy.
For now, though, this is where we're at. It'll be exciting to see how things progress in the next week. We're to that point where there's a lot happening in a lot of different sports. We will be sure to be back here at the same time next week to cover it all. Thank you to everybody for tuning in tonight. And until next time, good night, everybody.